You know, I already knew I loved our education consultant, Liz Englander, not just for our listeners here on WACC, but I personally have been in touch with Liz since the time Chase was born. So what, over the last 5 years or so? And she has helped me with so many things just personally. And of course, our listeners love her. It's interesting because I didn't really know what Liz was going to talk about, but this is something that may turn into a series for especially the month of May. Ironically enough, I always think when we get to May, it is Mental Health Awareness Month. And, you know, we're so focused on the mental health of our children and making sure that they have confidence and making sure that they know themselves and they feel comfortable within their own skin. And what's interesting is while we are so focused on this, you know, we sort of miss the boat a little bit when they're so young, you know, preschool, kindergarten, first, second, third grade, when kids could potentially have a learning disability. A lot of times it feels like you are in a boat without an oar and you don't know what direction you're going in. And so interestingly enough, as we, you know, as I am thinking about mental health and, you know, what this could do to impact a child if it's not diagnosed fast enough, interestingly enough, Liz decided to take one snippet of this conversation today and focus on dyslexia, because it sounds like, Liz, you've had a lot of inquiries about, you know, detecting dyslexia and how do I know if my child is struggling to read and could be illiterate? And when you look at the statistics, this is something that impacts millions and millions of Americans. More than 40 million U.S. adults have dyslexia, with only 2 million of them actually receiving a diagnosis. So the majority of people don't even know they have dyslexia. This is a huge topic, and I'm so glad you're tackling it. So thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It's always a pleasure talking with you. But, you know, being in the schools more than I've ever been before, I see so many problems. And one of the biggest problems is this is very much not detected at an early age. The classrooms are bigger. There's no assistant in there, a paraprofessional in so many of the classrooms anymore. But when I go into the schools and I see frustration levels, and especially sometimes working privately with some of these students on the weekend, I see so much of a frustration level where I'm giving them so many interesting things to do, and they're like my children, really. You know how much I love them. I could see them starting to read and throwing the book down, and, Mrs. Liz, I can't do it. I can't do it. So I calm them down, and I assess the situation, and also in the schools, too. And you see there is a problem. And my biggest concern and my biggest hope and wish as an educator for so many years is for this to be detected as soon as possible. Because by the time they go into first grade, things drastically start to change.
Yes.
They don't want to go to school. They start pouting. They don't want to go to school. They come up with all kind of excuses. They see that they're not the same as the other children in the classroom. Things begin to get hard, and reading starts to pick up. And they're embarrassed because they can't do the reading. They can't do other things, too. And they'll realize that something is different about them. They don't want the kids to see them. And sometimes, you know, children could be very malicious.
Oh, my gosh,
and they
yes.
start laughing at them and criticizing them. And that's where the problem begins. I've gotten so many phone calls the last month or so. And I tell the parents to calm down. Just, you know, evaluate the situation. You could talk to me. But you really need to go to school and talk to the teacher, because she may be aware of it. She may not be aware of it, but it's beginning, especially in first grade. And then make a referral. Don't let it go. It's so important. Reading is a basic fundamental of learning.
Yeah.
And if you don't know how to read, you're lost in the shuffle.
That's
and
very
it
true.
Goes on. And I could tell you that I know a few adults that do have dyslexia, and they cover up for it. They're professional. No one would ever know that they have it, but they've struggled all their life. And, you know, I spoke with them before my presentation, and they said to me, Liz, God bless you. Do what you're doing, because if we don't deal with this at this young age, they're going to get lost. And it takes so long and frustrating to catch up with
Absolutely. Well, and you know what, Liz Englander, again, who's our education consultant on the show, I could tell you as a parent, my son does not have dyslexia. However, I absolutely have a very strong feeling he has learning disabilities, which we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. You know, he sees an OT. He was speech delayed. So this is fine for us. We're fine with it. But, you know, I have to be honest with you, Liz. I love his teacher. I love his principal. I've talked to the superintendent, you know, but it feels like, and I don't know if you could speak on this at all, because obviously you're in the system, but you know, it feels like, you know, hey, we'll see what sort of happens. You know, here's some recommendations. Here are some things you could do. But to me, I want to get my kid tested. Okay. I want to get my kid tested. I want to find out what's going on with him, but that's going to cost me thousands and thousands of dollars instead of just using the school system. And by the time it feels like they're going to test him, he already feels like a failure. He's only in kindergarten and he already feels inferior to his other classmates. And I don't understand why we can't get these kids tested earlier and avoid things like mental health crises and all these other problems that we are trying to attack, it seems like, from the wrong end of things. And again, I'm not expecting you to address why we don't test them.
No, I could say to you one thing, too.
Yeah.
I work in a team with a group of educators in the Fairfield school system, mm-hmm. dealing with certain children. And I see their frustration level, too. It's not the teachers, basically, because people are put on a waiting list. And the waiting list takes forever to get to the point where your child is number, say, 50 in line.
Sure.
So you, as a parent, have to try to be an advocate and talk to the teacher and request a conference and see if they could push him up in the line. Because you, as a parent, being the advocate, are usually right about your child. I see it all the time, too. I get frustration levels, not with the school, just because there's not enough people out there. There's so many kids with special needs now that they just can't get it as fast as they want to get at it, Melissa. The classrooms are large and whatever, but you got to push for it because I'm a firm believer if we don't catch it at this early age, then it's going to continue. Now, I spot it usually in kindergarten. I'm so attuned to it because these kids are part of my life and I want to see the best for them. And they share their frustrations with me. You know, they feel comfortable enough and they'll sit and cry and hold on to me. And my heart breaks for them because mm-hmm. it's not their choice to be this way.
No.
But we have to try to push for it. And there was a mother, I read this wonderful article, and she has pushed for the detection of this dyslexia. And there was a law passed, I believe, in 2018 that would give them, instruction in a special program to see what the situation is and help these children along. And it stresses constantly, early intervention is the best remedy to help this.
Of course.
Once they get this, they'll be so different. It's never going to go away, but you as a parent and the teachers will be given resources and how to better handle them in the classroom. Because don't forget, too, a one-to-one intervention is wonderful. You could deal with them on a one-to-one basis. But in the classroom, when there's 20 children or more, and there's a lot of special needs children many times, you can't really devote this time to helping them, and that's when the problem exists.
As I mentioned before, this is probably going to be a multi-week series, so don't worry, we're going to continue with Liz. But we're talking about early detection of dyslexia, and I'm curious, Liz, if you could just maybe list for us some tall tale signs of a child that's struggling so that we can empower parents to advocate better for their kids.
Okay. Well, first of all, this is a specific learning disability that's neurological in origin, and it impacts reading, word recognition, and spelling, and results from a significant deficit in phonological processing or the awareness of the ability to manipulate the individual sounds of spoken language. If you see a child and they're trying to spell a word and they spell it all backwards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that is a red flag many times if it continues. You got to be vigilant enough to notice this with your child. If he's struggling with the reading and can't read, you know, all these things are specific topics that you have to look for. And it's this is really a primary disability for special ed, and they need to be evaluated as soon as possible so they could go into a program and feel better about themselves. And they're so happy when they're able to do this instead of struggling. It's really, really sad. Mm-hmm. And I don't fault anybody, but as a parent, you know your child well enough. And if you see these situations, the schools are very reluctant also, too, to test them when they're in kindergarten, et cetera, et cetera. But you could start picking up these situations at that early age. And I rather be safe than sorry. I rather feel that as a parent, I've accomplished something and my child doesn't have this. He's just developmentally, not up to par of the rest of the children or himself, and work it that way. But don't let him struggle. It's so sad to watch these little ones come in and cry to me.
It's horrible.
And, you know, my heart breaks for them.
Yeah.
And they're not academically ready, and their morale is, you know, is not good, their self-confidence. And they, you know, as soon as they get the special help on a one-to-one intervention, their whole morale will change. Their whole mood will change. They want to go to school again. They want to be part of the group, but they sort of go to the other side when they're in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And they know they're not at the level and something's wrong. And the children laugh at them and make fun of them. And that's so bad for someone's self-esteem. So please, as a parent or as an educator, I'm not faulting anyone, because I know what the system is right now and the lack of staff and so forth. But help these children. Don't let them struggle. You know, if we help one child, that's an accomplishment for our, you know, our career. And they need the help. They want the help. Many times as a parent, and I'm not knocking anyone, parent will say they don't know what they're talking about. There's nothing wrong with my child. You know, let him go. It's fine. But, you know, he's not being labeled. We're trying to help him. We're trying to help him succeed.
I agree, Liz. And I think even that has, you know, we have to do a better job as a society of getting rid of those stigmas. Because even the idea of kids thinking that, you know, the way that their brains function, it means that there's something wrong, I think is horrible. I think the fact that you learn in a different way does not mean you're less than. It does not mean you're dumb. It does not mean you have something wrong with you. It's just that you are wired a different way, and that's okay. And that's why it's so important to have early intervention. If we can figure out ways that will help these children to learn the exact same content that everybody else in their classroom is learning, just in a way that they understand, then why aren't we doing that? And that's why I think what you're saying is, it's not one answer. It's not one entity. It's parents recognizing it. It's teachers also bringing it to parents' attention. It's advocating for these kids. It's finding solutions, and it's breaking the stigma. And I think even just us having this conversation today, I hope inspires people to look past the ego of there's nothing wrong with my child. And it's a hard one to swallow. I know it's a hard one to swallow, because I watched my parents have to swallow that when my brother was diagnosed with autism. It is not fun to hear that your child is struggling and is not what the quote unquote normal is. I get that, but I'd rather do what I need to do for my kid than to fit in with society.
I could tell you it also stems in the home, too. About a month ago, I had a little boy, and he was struggling like crazy. And he came in, and he ran to me, and he was crying. He was uncontrollable for a little while. And I said, "What's the matter? You could tell me. You're my bestest friend," he says. I said, "Well, you could tell me." And he says, "My brother and sister laugh at me. They call me stupid." So I said, "Well, you're not stupid. We're just having difficulty with reading and whatever, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to help you." So I sat with him for, you know, many, many months down the road, and he was diagnosed, and I did work with him on a one-to-one basis, and he's up to the level now. But what I did as his advocate, I brought the brother and sister in and sat with them and talked to them and explained to them the whole situation and whatever. And, you know, coming from a stranger and someone that they know that they could trust too, it stopped. And they encouraged the brother. They worked with the brother. They were shown how to work with him. And he's at the level now. It's never going to be perfect, but at least he has the self-confidence and whatever. Mm-hmm. But you have to work with these families.
Yeah.
And the families have to realize that if they're spotted with something, it's not a failure on their part.
Yeah.
It's something they're born with, and we have to try to work as a team. And like I say, every time, patience is a virtue. And if you don't have it and you can't do this, he is going to fail. You have to help him. It's a very serious situation.
I agree.
And you want to nip it in the bud. And that's why there are people like myself and all over that will work with you and help you. But you have to recognize the fact, too, that there might be something wrong. And it is curable, but it takes a while to deal with it.
Well, Liz, I know we've run out of time for today's segment. And I know we're going to continue talking about this throughout the month of May. But if people want to work with you now, what's the best way to reach you?
203-929-1352, 203-258-4351. I just want to end something by telling you, Melissa, I am so grateful for you and all your listeners. 3 weeks ago, I was asked to come aboard as a consultant at the Teddy Bear Corner Incorporated in Fairfield,
yeah,
and three wonderful schools, and she praised the program and my, you know, information and whatever. And, you know, it's a great school too. All these schools do so much with early readiness and whatever. You got to find the right program for your children and find educators that will dedicate themselves to this profession and work with them. If you don't have patience and love and understanding, it's a village out there and it's not going to work. But God bless all of you. And there is somebody out there that will help you get through this.
I agree. And Liz, thank you for sharing that. And I know, as I mentioned, we'll continue the conversation, maybe talking about some other challenges that children face and the importance of early detection. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day, Melissa.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate
you. Take care.
Bye-bye. You too. Our education consultant, Liz Englander, here on WICC.